everybody, and welcome back to Calibrating Your Compass, a J.J. Taylor Leadership Competency Podcast Series. I'm your host, Jeff Weaver, Training Director for J.J. Taylor, and I am joined once again by Bob and Matt Briggs as we get ready to talk about the importance of instilling trust. Bob, Matt, welcome back.
Jeff, thanks. We're once again glad to be here, especially talking about trust. That's the most important of the competencies. It's foundational. It's critical. So we're excited about having this conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Trust is first because it's number one. Everything else falls apart. The other six competencies, if we don't have a high trust environment, the relationships we have at the office and on the team. So this will be a good one.
Happy to have you guys with us once again. And we're kicking off our series here with our first leadership competency today. We're going to be talking about trust because it all starts with trust. And trust is really at the heart of effective leadership. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Our first leadership competency, instilling trust. So Matt, Bob, why don't you guys tell us a little bit about how this competency is defined and maybe what it is we need to really know to understand it at its core. And then we can talk a little bit about some of the tips, tricks, and ideas that you can share with leaders to help build trust with their teams.
Sure, absolutely. You know, the way trust looks, especially with these seven competencies, I mean, trust is the foundation. If you look at you're building a house, your strongest part of the house has to be the foundation. If there's no trust, your house is going to be built on sand and it's going to crumble. And so really a brief definition, if you looked up Webster's and looked at trust, you know, this would be kind of a modified version, but I think it's a great version. And trust really is the assured reliance. So keyword there, assurance, then reliance on the character, the competence, and the credibility of a leader. And so what kind of character does a leader have? How do they behave? Are they competent in their job and their skill sets and their knowledge? And then are they credible? You know, do they do what they say they're going to do? And, you know, a key thing with all of those, trust is difficult to earn. It takes time. It takes energy. It takes effort, especially when you have new people coming into the company. You're a leader and you're in a new role. You've got a new team. I mean, you have to build a relationship, and a key component of that is building trust. And then because it's difficult to earn, it's really easy to lose. Probably everybody listening to this has lost or damaged trust with somebody that they know or a relationship they have, someone that works for them, or they lost trust in a leader they worked for. And really, once you lose it, it's very difficult to earn it back. But you know, fortunately, with the great manager training and this competency and what we're going to talk about today, there are some blocking and tackling things you can do to earn it, to keep it, restore it if it's lost. And, you know, we'll be talking about that the rest of today. So looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Great. I have a couple of definitions of trust we've used here over the past few years as we've taught Great Manager. And I want to bounce them off you and see what you guys think. One is Simon Sinek, who does a great job talking a lot about leaders who have a why and having a purpose driven behind your mission and your work and so forth. Simon Sinek says that trust is the answer to the question, do you believe what I believe? And I think that's always an interesting way to approach one aspect of trust, because when it comes to working together and working in a team culture here, I always feel like the question for me is, do you believe first choice? And if you believe first choice, there's an inherent level of trust I can give you. And if you don't, if I question that you're committed to the cause, as it were, then it makes it much more difficult. So when it comes to trust, I think there's an element of shared value in that, the confidence that we believe in the same thing. And I think that's why the mission and the competencies can be so important. But what are your thoughts on trust as a measure of how much do you believe in these competencies the way I believe in these competencies?
Well, I think it's absolutely critical. I mean, if you don't believe in what the company is trying to do, the company's mission, the company's vision, the company's core values, and not only just believe them, but walk the talk, you're not going to get any support. And I think I said earlier that the most important aspect of all of this is your behavior as a leader. And I'll give you a couple of examples of that. When we first got involved in really, really changing the culture at J.J. Taylor, you know, it was something new. I think there were some skeptics, to say the least. There were people that didn't buy it at all. But the thing that was most impressive, and one of the reasons that we were able to transform J.J. Taylor, is because John Taylor was in every single one of these competency training sessions, every single one of them. And the other person that was in these was Jay Martin. And I think those two guys sent a message to the organization that this stuff is important to me. And by doing that, it was important to them. And so we were able to get the buy-in that we needed to really make this work. You know, so many organizations, and I will say that I remember the first time we were in the boardroom at J.J. Taylor, the core values were on a big poster on a wall. And I remember very distinctly that I asked the group, hey guys, what are the core values of the company? And they immediately looked down, looked around, you know, tried to, you know, wish, I could see them wishing they were under the table. And I remember watching John, I could see the smoke coming out of his ears. But it was just an example of where all companies start. You know, everybody has a mission, everybody has a vision, everybody has core values, but they don't really, they're not in the hearts and minds of the people. And so the buy-in for what we're doing is absolutely critical. And the most effective way to get the buy-in is you have to have the top people in the organization modeling those core values, modeling the leadership competencies, and other leaders in the company being able to see these folks as role models, John and Jay in particular. And it's the reason that we were able to make significant change and really get this into the hearts and minds of the people at J.J. Taylor.
John Maxwell likes to say the law of the lid, I believe, is that you are the lid on the organization and can't outgrow the leader. And so you're absolutely right, Bob. If you don't have the leadership buying off on this, then it is just words on a wall. It's just something that, you know, somebody signed off on and said, oh, yeah, that's our culture. We'll go print up a couple of posters and call it a day. But that's not the way it works here. And it really does begin from the top. And for those who weren't here to understand, you know, when we say everybody's been through great manager all the way up to the top, including John and everyone, we mean it. And it's important. And it was important to them to send that signal, because to that point of trust is I believe what or you believe what I believe, you got to know what they believe. And they're taking the time to go through these courses, learn alongside the first group, sent the signal that we believe in this stuff. And so now that becomes the expectation of every manager. If you don't believe it, you can't be trusted, because we believe it all the way up to the top. We believe it. There's no one in this organization that doesn't embrace this as the right way to do things. So if you don't embrace it too, you're on the outside of the circle of trust sort of from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. And we've been in a number of situations over the years where the top leaders may have believed in what we were trying to accomplish, but they weren't participating. They weren't really modeling that culture. And the fact that the top people in the organization believed, not only just believed in it, but they were modeling that behavior is why we were so successful.
Another definition of trust, or another angle into trust that we sometimes talk about, comes from Pat Lencioni and the 5 dysfunctions of a team, which has sort of become a core book for us in how we model our team behaviors. And he says that trust is the belief that others' intentions are good and that there's no reason to be protective around one another. And I think that's another great insight in terms of, I can trust you when I know that your work and my work are headed towards the same goal, and that you're not out for your team and I'm not out for my team. We're here for the team, which is the J.J. Taylor team. So when, again, it comes to instilling trust amongst our teams, I think common ground and common goal and shared vision can often be a sense of that. Talk a little bit, if you will, about sort of how did we achieve this common agreement around the instilling trust and how that plays into the broader sense of, you know, trust comes from having shared vision or goals.
Well, most importantly, and really fundamentally, if you don't trust your people, they're not going to trust you back. Okay. Now people can earn the right not to be trusted, but you need to start with a premise that my people are going to do the right thing. They have the right beliefs. They're not going to work in a selfish way or counter to the objectives of the team. And of course, we know that all people don't necessarily do that, but trust from a leadership perspective has to start with, I trust my people that they're going to do the right things. Okay. Once you get there, then you begin to earn the trust of your folks. And then the next step from there is really the coaching, the developing, the mentoring to help them understand the importance of trust, what it means, how they earn the trust of the people around them, So, you know, if it's important for a leader to earn the trust of their direct reports, it's equally important for individual team players to be able to earn the trust of each other. And it's incumbent on the leader to be able to teach them how to do that. And that's why, you know, as we've talked earlier, that this stuff is not just for leaders. This is for every single employee at J.J. Taylor.
And really, if you think about it, to piggyback on what Bob said, I mean, if you think of every employee in any company, right, I mean, there's an aspect of being a steward of the owner or the stockholders, whoever it is. In J.J. Taylor's case, you know, John Taylor's the owner. And so to Lencioni's point is if we're thinking about, hey, what's in the best interest of J.J. Taylor, what's in the best interest of John Taylor, am I making decisions based on that? And then the second point after that is, do I care about my people and care about the folks that I'm working with? So if they know I have interests bigger than or that are about me, that are about the best interest of the team and the organization, and then I know that that leader or that person cares about me and cares about people on the team, I mean, that's the two-pronged approach, really. I mean, and it all kind of stems from that, you know, stewarding the resources and the job we've been given to make the owner happy and achieve our vision and mission, and then working with others that people know we care about each other, and it's more than just about ourselves, but it's about the team and the organization, and that's where really trust starts with all this.
Jeff, one other thought about that is that when we started with J.J. Taylor, it was a very siloed organization. I think, you know, generally speaking, individual teams ran fairly well for the most part, but the real challenge is for an organization is to be able to build a team of teams. That's hard. But the idea of knocking down those silos so that we can serve our customers more effectively is critical to the process. And of course, even when we're talking about team of teams, trust is still fundamental. We have to be able to earn the trust, not only of the people that are on our little team, but we've got to be able to get things done to be able to serve our customers in an excellent way. We've got to be able to build relationships, build trust across the organization. And that requires us to knock down these silos. And I think J.J. Taylor over the years has done a great job of doing that.
We've certainly worked really hard at it. And I remember, Bob, because I came on not long after there, and it was a very siloed organization at the time. There were big divides between sales, operations, even within operations between warehouse and delivery. And it has certainly been one of our missions over the years to break through those silos by creating relationships, you know, at every level, and getting people to understand that it's about a common vision, it's about a common goal, that we're all here to serve our employees, our customers, our suppliers. And if everybody understands and has confidence that every team in the company is working towards that end, we can achieve trust. It's when we start to look at the other teams and go, are you really in it for the right reasons or are you in it for your reasons? That's when trust starts to collapse and erode and create all sorts of nightmares around communication and, you know, angling and politics and all this other stuff that happens. So if we know that even when we disagree or even when we make mistakes, that those mistakes come from a place of fundamentally we were all trying to do the right thing for our constituents, it's a lot easier to get back together, move past those, and keep the silos down and the teams together when we know that we were all working towards the same goal.
Well, one of the things we stressed as we were talking about trust is, and it was kind of a battle cry, that it's not about me. Okay, as a leader, you set yourself aside and you make it not only about your team, but about the organization. And the leaders that are successful have to have this kind of this strategic system-wide view of no matter what, I'm going to do what's the very best for the corporation and for the stakeholders, not what's best for me and my little team. And that's a very difficult challenge because you just human beings inherently, they want to kind of take care of their own. And part of the change process, part of changing the culture is to really impress upon leaders that it is not about them. That when they accepted that position as a leader, they no longer are thinking about themselves, but they're only thinking about what's best for the best for the company at large and best for the stakeholders.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. So I think that actually leads us right into the next big question I have, which is, what does that trusted leader look like? How do we measure trust or evaluate it? What results should we expect to see? Because, you know, trust is not something that I can put in a bucket and measure in ounces, right? We know that trust is in place and working when we see the results of it. So what are some of those things that when you come in and work with an organization like ours or any organization, what are you looking for to test for trust? How do you know if trust is there, if it's working, and if it's not? What are the telltale signs, and how do you sort of measure or evaluate the trust of an organization, peer-to-peer, team-to-team, or even, between a supervisor and the people they manage?
Yep. I think that you're right, that measuring a trust from a numbers perspective is difficult to do. But you can measure what people do and how they behave. It's pretty obvious, actually. And so, and it's not rocket science. It's pretty simple stuff. But one of the fundamentals, one of the principles is that you have to trust people first. You have to be a trustworthy individual that trusts your team. If you're suspicious, if you don't empower your people to do their work, you're not going to be trusted as a leader. We've seen cases with other clients over the years where, I can remember seeing a plant manager out on the shop floor taking pictures of employees goofing off so that he could show them in a meeting to do that. That's a fatal mistake, and he didn't last very long with the company. But being able to trust people and respect people and have confidence that they can do the job is kind of fundamental to trust. The rest of it really is just pretty basic stuff. It's doing what you say you're going to do. You have to be reliable as a leader. If you tell people you're going to do something, you need to do that. And one of the things we've talked a lot about, back when we were working with J.J. Taylor leaders, oftentimes as leaders, we don't it's not that we intentionally don't do what we say we're going to do. But we forget. We've got 100 things we've got to get done in a day. We're trying to get through our to-do list. Somebody comes up to us and asks a question or needs something that to us is not important, to them is very important, and we just forget. And if you do that often enough, if you forget often enough, then you're going to wind up with a group of people that just don't trust you. So you really have to do what you say you're going to do, and we stress that. The other thing that's important about trust is that we talk a lot about encouragement, for example. But what we're really talking about is that you have to send clear, consistent messages that you care about your people, not just as workers, but as human beings. You need to know something about their families. You need to know the name of their spouse. You need to know what they're interested in. And you have to be able to do that consistently to let people know that you really do care about them. And if you can convince people that you care about them on a personal level, they'll jump off a cliff for you. They'll trust you. You need to do that. And I would say the third thing that's also critically important is you need to be able to invest in the careers of the people that work for you. If they believe that you're doing everything you can to help them be successful, to help them learn to be more effective in their role, to help prepare them for the next role, If you're pouring into them from a development perspective, again, that builds a high level of trust, and that's what level five leaders do. They pour into their people. They consider that a key responsibility, and once people believe that, then the trust level goes way up. The engagement goes way up, and the effectiveness of your organization goes way up. So it's doing what you say you're going to do. It's trusting your people. It's pouring into their careers and helping them be successful. Those are to me fundamental to building a high level of trust in an organization.
And Bob, I'd add one other on there. Confidence plus arrogance or confidence plus pride is a recipe for disaster in a low trust environment. But confidence, while being humble and having that level of humility, is huge. A leader that admits their mistakes and weaknesses, raises their hand when they need help, raises their hand when they're confused on something, unsure of something, you know, just being that model of, hey, I don't have all the answers. I'm not going to tell you all the answers. I need your help to solve problems, to make decisions, and just having that sense of humility as a leader is a critical driver of trust in doing what you say you're going to do and having competence. And if you're a leader or anybody in the organization that does not take ownership of mistakes or problems or challenges or raising your hand, just like, you know, out on the baseball field, a lot of us were taught when we made a bad throw, you kind of raise your hand and say, hey, my bad, and, you know, pat your chest. And leaders and all people in the organization, that humility factor is a huge component of building a high trust environment.
And, you know, and what we advise people to do is identify people in the organization that model humility. You know, great leaders that are also humble leaders. And, you know, the person that we used a lot, I probably shouldn't say this on air because he'll get a bigger head than he already has, but Jay Martin is the epitome of a humble leader. And so, you know, my advice to all J.J. Taylor leaders is to watch Jay, watch what he does. And one of the things that he does best, even as the president of the company, is that he maintains a real sense of humility that's legitimate. It's real. He believes in it. It's not about him. And those are the things that we need to embrace to be more effective in how we lead.
A lot to unpack there, so I want to go back and touch on a few different things because I think what you just gave us was such a brilliant roadmap. Thank you both. Let me do some follow-up questions on all four or five of those points because I think there's a lot there. I'm going to take it all the way back to the first one that you said, Bob, was trusted leaders trust their teams and they empower their teams. And I think that's a really key point because one of the symptoms that I would look at if I'm evaluating a manager's performance to see if they're trusted by their team is exactly that. How much do they trust their team? Are they delegating properly? Are they, you know, handing off appropriately? These are signs that they have confidence in their people and they trust them well. And yet I find a lot of leaders who would tell you, oh, I trust my people completely, and yet I don't see them handing things off properly. I don't see the delegation. I don't see the empowerment. You know, they've become the bottleneck of their own team because they want everything to run through them. How do you reconcile for that leader? What do you say to that leader that seems to be stuck on, I need to have my hands in everything, or I need to, you know, they think they're helping by being down into the details of everything. They may not even realize the effect, but what do you say to that leader that is trying to build trust but doesn't necessarily hand off or trust their team or empower their team the way that they should and making that link for them that that's part of trust?
The first step in that, Jeff, is that you have to understand that the basic principle, one of the basic principles of leadership, is that you push decision-making as far down into the organization as you possibly can. And most leaders don't understand that. That's something that has to be learned. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I'm the boss, and so therefore I have to make the decisions. And you find out pretty quickly if you're making all the decisions, you really become a bottleneck. Your people don't learn anything, and you wind up overwhelmed. And I can't tell you the number of leaders that we've worked with over the years that are just literally overwhelmed because they're in the weeds. And so. So what do you do? So, you know, that doesn't mean that I'm going to take all this stuff and just kind of throw it down to the next level. But that's why it's so important to be able to do the coaching and the mentoring and the developing and the training to be able to equip your people to be able to make their own decisions. But at the end of the day, the goal is I want my people to make their own decisions. My job as a leader is to help them make decisions. It's not to make decisions for them. And I don't care what level you're at. I don't care if you're the president of the company or you're a frontline supervisor. The idea is that you push organization or you push decision making as low down as you possibly can. But step one that you can't forget is you gotta prepare and equip them to be able to do that well.
I think sometimes what makes that so challenging for our folks, and I see you, Bob, you're articulating it perfectly. This is such a classic problem for us. But I do see it's a challenge for a lot of leaders who are now in the position of leading a team that they were once a part of, or, you know, I was the best sales rep, so I got to be sales manager. I was the best delivery driver, so I got to become delivery manager. And it's the challenge of they want to rely on the skill set they have instead of developing the skill set they need. I know how to solve that problem. I was a great sales rep. I can solve it faster than I can teach it, which is true. Teaching, training, developing your team to do what you used to do and to become what you were, that does take more time. And a lot of young managers, they don't think they have the time, they don't want to spend the time, or they don't know how important it is. But I think it's interesting to point out to them, as you are, that you're not just missing an opportunity to take work off your plate. You're missing an opportunity to show your team that you trust them.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. And also develop them. They can't learn anything if all you're doing is making all their decisions for them. But, you've got to make sure that they're equipped to be able to make the decisions, but then you've got to be very disciplined to be able to do that. And I'll tell you where it's difficult. I do a lot of executive coaching, very high level people, and even they sometimes don't get it. And as you advance in an organization, as you gain more and more responsibility, particularly in higher level jobs, if you're not good at pushing decisions down, you'll fail. I mean, it's literally a recipe for failure. So you've got to get out of the weeds. You've got to stop making decisions for your people, and you've got to help them make their own decisions. And that's part of the coaching process. It's not a matter of, I'm going to tell you what to do because it's faster and easier. I've made that decision 100 times, but it's investing in your people so that I don't even have to get involved in that going forward. So I can work on things that are more important, more strategic, more about change. I can spend more of my time working on the business rather than working in the business. It's a critical principle for leadership that is something that many, many leaders struggle with.
Absolutely. But you couldn't be more right. It's an imperative. So I think it's a great thing to think about in the context of trust, because that sometimes helps us push it higher on the importance list. When we think about, I don't have time. I don't want to take the time to invest. I don't have the slowdown to teach instead of just make the decisions. But if we think about it as a trust issue, we may give ourselves more permission to spend that time because we understand how important trust is, where in the day-to-day we just think about, oh, I just want to get the thing done and it's faster if I make the decision. If that approach ultimately undermines trust with our teams, it wasn't worth the time saved, and that's a great way to think about it. So I appreciate that perspective a lot. The next one you mentioned that I want to touch on for a second is the do what you say you will do and the follow through, because you rightfully pointed out that sometimes it's not bad intentions that causes us to fail there. It's literally just being overwhelmed, having too much on the plate, being forgetful. For those of us who are challenged by having a lot on the plate, how do we make sure that even when we make those mistakes, and knowing that there's a limit to how many we could make, period. But when we make those mistakes, how do we reconcile them in a way for people that lets them know it was a failing of procedure or a failing of effort, not a failing of trust?
Well, there are really a couple things about that. And the first one's kind of easy, but it's something that most people don't do. You got to write stuff down. You have to write stuff down. And the best leaders that I run across, They'll have a notebook somewhere. It might be in their back pocket. It might be in their left hand. But the best leaders that I run across are always carrying something to write on. And they are always writing things down. And so that's kind of fundamental to doing what you say you're going to do. And it just takes the discipline to be able to do it. And I'm telling you that if you don't do that, you're going to forget stuff. So one of the things that we talk to people about is that, you know, that's just something that you have to do. The pace of business today, the amount of issues that you're dealing with over the course of a day, there's nobody on the planet that's smart enough to remember every little detail. And the thing that's really, most damaging is that something that there may be some issue that's very important to one of your people that's not important at all to you. And you don't really recognize it. It slips your mind, and if you do enough of that, then you're going to wind up creating some real problems for yourself. So what happens if you mess up? Well, the if you mess up, you got to fess up. You got to sit down with that individual and say, look, I know I made this commitment to you. I apologize. I just completely forgot. I'm not going to let it happen again. I bought myself a notebook from Walmart the other day. I'm going to start writing stuff down. But that shows humility. It shows commitment. And you're going to be less likely to forget things if you just put some kind of and put it in your phone. If that's, you know, I mean, you can just pop open your iPhone and create a list. But you have to have a methodology to be able to remember all of the things that you've got to do over the course of a day. And then when you mess up, you have to apologize. You know, sometimes you need to apologize more than once to make sure that people understand that you're sincere about it. But this whole idea, the principle of doing what you say you're going to do, is critical to being able to build trust. You have to be reliable. When you say something, you have to mean it. You have to do it. And it's just got to be something you've got to be very, very intentional about, because as Matt said, trust is very fragile. I mean, you could lose it in a heartbeat, and you just cannot afford that, because we know that when you lose it, getting it back is not only difficult, but maybe with some people impossible.
And a critical step we don't talk about that much, Bob, is after you commit to doing something, you write it on your note page on your iPhone, you put it in your notebook, you put it on your calendar, whatever administrative step you have, and then you go do it. A lot of times we forget to follow up with the person that we made that commitment to. And so maybe it was something, hey, I need to go ask another person on the team about this and get an answer. Well, I forgot to go tell the person I made that commitment to, hey, I did ask them. This was the answer I was given. This is the decision we're making. And so that follow-up is a critical step too. We may be checking off our checklist in our notebook, but we've forgotten to go back and follow up with that person that we made that commitment or promise to. Even though we did it, they're thinking, well, shoot, I never heard back about that again. And then that can dwindle the trust a little bit. So that follow-up is another important step after we've made that promise.
I think that's a great point, Matt. You're absolutely right. How often does an employee say, hey, can you fix my time card? And we go in and we fix it. But until they know we fixed it, they're sitting there wondering if we've done what we said we will do. If we're not claiming the credit, they may not just go check the time card. Or even if they do and see that we did it, they may still feel a little hurt that we didn't take the time to close that loop and keep the communication. And that's part of that communicating effectively we'll be talking about on the next episode so much. But I fully agree with that. And I think it also, Matt, speaks to the piece you were talking about the humility and the humbleness. You know, we started working this year, the new Ideal Team Player by Pat Lencioni, into our curriculum. And one of those pillars that he talks about for an ideal team player is humble. And the ability to say, I messed up, I'm sorry, is part of that humility that I think you're right is deeply at the heart of what makes somebody trustable, is someone we feel like doesn't have that shield in front of them at all times, that doesn't wear a suit of armor around us, but is actually open and vulnerable and willing to say, I'm sorry, I messed up, and you know, it's my fault, but I hope you can forgive me.
Yeah, spot on. I mean, the environments where that's not going on, the whispers around that person that never admits mistakes, raises their hand, asks for help, the whispers around them are all about, hey, he or she, they don't have all the answers, or hey, I talked to a leader the other day and they gave me a laundry list of everything these two leaders on the team are doing wrong and how they don't know what they're talking about. And that was a whole nother coaching conversation with that leader. But when you have this vacuum of humility not present, that's what starts to fester. And then people start trying to find and analyze everything you're doing wrong, versus when you're leading out in that humility and raising your hand and just showing you, hey, that you don't have all the answers. You don't have it all together. That's a driving force of saying, hey, we have to Bob's point, it's not about me. We have to get this done together as a team, and I'm only as strong as the team is. And, you know, a strand of three cords is not easily broken. That's a Navy SEAL mantra. You know, one is none, two is one, and, you know, three is many. I probably had that wrong, so any military veterans, please forgive me. But something along those lines, you get the point.
No, I completely agree, and I think, you know, that – There's that tendency as leaders, we want to be seen as the expert. We want to be seen as a resource to our people, to our peers. We want to look like we've got everything under control and that we're getting it done. And especially young leaders or new leaders, you know, they want to impress. I say this all the time about new hires when I teach trainers who will be working with new hires. I'm like, they want to impress you. They've got that new puppy syndrome. They want to make you happy. They want to show you that they can do it and that they know it, but they don't. And we have to make it safe for them to ask questions and admit that they're still learning and admit that they're wrong. We know that nobody's perfect. And so when we see someone trying to put that image out, it makes us distrustful, I think, because we know it's not true. And so we don't know what they're hiding, but it's got to be something because nobody's that good. Nobody's that perfect. And that's where I think, like you say, leaders who have that humility, who can admit their own failings, it's just it resonates with people as a more honest approach because we know we have them. We know they have them. And if you can at least acknowledge them and admit them, then it says something about your openness and your trustworthiness versus trying to present that image that we all know isn't quite right of I've always got this under control.
You know, one of the thought about the do what you say you're going to do principle is that if you're doing a good job of delegating, of empowering, of pushing decisions lower down into the organization, doing what you say you're going to do is much, much easier. Without a doubt, you get in trouble with do what you say you're going to do because you've got too much on your plate. You're trying to do too much. You're not using your people properly. So it's a critical part of how you function as a leader. And I think the point here is that so many of these principles are linked. One drives another that drives another. And certainly doing what you say you're going to do is impacted a lot by how you lead, how you delegate, how you empower.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Another one you mentioned, Bob, and I want to ask you guys both about this. The importance of having a personal connection with your teams, of getting to know them beyond just the job, of knowing what their hobbies are, their interests are, what's going on with their families. I think it is such a critical piece of building total trust. But there are two things I want to get your perspectives on. One is some people are just not necessarily wired that way, and it's hard for them. And some people approach their work very compartmentalized. My work life is my work life. My personal life is my personal life. To people who have that mentality of, I don't want to worry about my employees' personal stuff. If they do a good job, that's good enough for me. And I don't want people to worry about what I'm doing outside the office. If I'm doing my work right, that should be enough. What do you say to someone with that sort of approach and mentality of compartmentalization as it relates to being able to build trust for their team and their peers?
Well, I would respond to that by just saying, look, you can't lead without really thinking about your people as human beings, and I would say that maybe even more strongly if you don't really care about your people, and I mean deeply care about your people, you probably shouldn't be a leader. Give you a quick example. A lot of people think Nick Saban's crazy. All they see is this little guy walking up and down the sideline in Alabama yelling and screaming at all of his players. Well, so you wonder why would they put up with that? Why would they play so hard and want to be so successful? But the reason that they do, and you have to really get to know Saban to understand this, Saban deeply, sincerely loves his players. They know that. It's not about just being great football players, but he wants them to be great human beings. And one of the reasons he's able to recruit like he does is because he's able to get that message across to his parent, to their parents. Mm-hmm. And so as a leader, you know, it's inherent. I mean, if, you know, there, again, we talked earlier about leadership aptitude. And so I would say to any leader, if you don't really care about your people, if you don't care about their success, you don't care about their well-being, you probably need to find another line of work.
No, I completely agree. And I think it is important to understand that if you treat people like nothing more than an employee, they will respond as nothing more than an employee. If you treat them like a person, you're going to get a lot more out of them in return. The other question I would have in this realm is, you know, in a world where social media has risen to become what it is, and we know so much more about each other than ever, and information is available everywhere, and oversharing almost seems to be the answer of the day, where people just put everything out there all the time. How do you find that balance between the other end? If one end of the spectrum is I'm not worried at all about who my people are, I just want to get good work done and be good workers, and that's enough. What do you do on the other end of the spectrum where it becomes almost an imposition, almost invasive, or you know, to that leader who their goal is to try and build a rapport and a connection but they're maybe tiptoeing up to and occasionally stumbling over the line that feels invasive or even creepy. How do you find that balance where you're not making your employees feel like you're trying to get into their personal life, but you are still in tune and care about who they are?
Yeah, that's another common mistake that we see with leaders, is that they get personally involved with their people. And by that, I mean, it's beyond just caring about them and taking an interest in their success, but it's really almost acting as a counselor, getting involved, for example, in marital problems or kid problems or drug and alcohol problems, that kind of stuff. Your role as a leader, when you see someone that's in trouble like that, is not to get involved in fixing it, but bring in the, you know, the right resources to be able to help them, whether it's an EAP program or somebody in HR. You know, you have to be able to point them in the right direction, but to cross the line, to become buddy buddy with someone, to be able to get in, you know, deeply into their personal matters, you know, being able, you know, socializing with people to a point where you're really too close to them is not a good idea. You have to keep some level of distance between yourself and your people. So you can certainly send clear messages consistently that you care about them. You just got to be careful that you don't go too far with that and become more of a counselor and involved in, you know, deep, complex personal problems, or become buddy buddy with someone where you're more equal rather than the boss subordinate relationship. That'll get you in trouble.
Definitely a challenge, but you're right. It's, you know, if we let the personal relationship build up too much in the wrong way, we do run the risk of that person seeing us more as a friend than as a leader. And now all of a sudden, you know, it can be harder to give feedback, harder to take direction, harder to hold them accountable. It can lead to situations where outsiders looking in may think, you know, favoritism's now in play and things like that. So it is a delicate set of guardrails that you can't ignore your people to the point where they feel like they're a number or an employee or a cog in the machine, but you also have to have the, again, back to what you said earlier, Matt, the humility to say, I care about you enough to get you in the right place with the right resources, but I understand my role enough to know when I need to hand that off to somebody else.
Yeah, you see it all the time in the news and the media, whether it's a sports coach or a leader, and things blow up down the road and you go back, well, they came to me with X, Y, and Z, and, you know, I cared about them, and I just wanted to help them. Well, did you bring in other resources? Did you point them to the right help that is qualified to help them and that is not their superior at work? Well, no, I didn't, you know, because it was sensitive, and I didn't feel I had the... And then you hear the laundry list of excuses, and so it's just always best, like you said, to be cautious, be humble, say, hey, I can't solve this problem. I can point you in the direction of someone that can help you, can assist you. You know, hey, I support you in that, and if that means, you know, you're going to go talk to HR and you need to have Friday off because you've got a family member that has cancer and this has been really difficult on you, I'm going to support that and be understanding, but we're going to include the right resources so we're communicating with the right folks and keeping that level of distance, that's the healthy level between you and your people if you're a leader. And then same thing, if you're not a leader, sharing information up and, you know, understanding, hey, this is also my superior, and what is appropriate, what isn't appropriate.
You know, when you're leading a group of people, they have all kinds of problems, some of them very serious. And so one of the reasons you want to develop a good relationship with your folks, you want to develop a high level of trust, is because you want them coming to you when they've got a problem, regardless of what that problem is. It might be a family problem. It might be a drug and alcohol problem. I mean, you know, no telling what it could be, but you want them to come to you and say, hey, I got an issue here, which gives you the opportunity to say, okay, let me get you the resources that you need to be able to address that. You don't fix it for them, but you point them in the right direction. The error that people make is that you don't have a good, close, high trust relationship. You're not aware of what they're dealing with. It begins to affect their job performance, and you may wind up even firing somebody for the wrong reasons. You know, personal problems cause performance issues at work. And so to know your people, to have a high level of trust, to be able to help them find the right resources, very, very important. And so it's just another reason why you need to build a very high level of trust with your team.
You're absolutely right, Bob. You know, I talk about my wife a lot sometimes on the podcast because she is a leader for a team. And one of the things that she's very good at is exactly what you just described, being able to have that balance of people will bring her what's going on without, you know, overstepping the bounds. And it's probably saved at least two different employees of hers who were having some really, you know, serious outside of work family type issues, and just their willingness to come forward to her and say, this is what's going on and I don't need you to solve it, but I need you to be aware of it. She was able to give them the grace to have a little bit of extra time, get things done in a little bit different way. And what would have probably looked to any other manager like a performance issue, she was able to go a step back and say, you know what? I know what's going on there. We'll help them out a little because they need it. We'll give them a little space. And in the end, those two employees are not only still with her team, but I mean, probably wouldn't work for anybody else at this point, because in a moment of need, they were given grace and an opportunity. And I think that goes a long way towards, again, building trust, not just with that one person, but because our teams talk to each other, the story gets out. You help one member on the team in a time of need, they're going to sing your praises to every other member of that team. They will defend you till the end of time because they trust you, and they're going to tell everybody why you should be trusted. One last question for you on this one, and then we'll wrap it up. But if you're a new manager or a newly promoted manager, if I'm looking to get trust sort of kickstarted, if I need to build trust quick, I have a new group of people, I'm new to this team or I'm new to this role, what are some simple things I might be able to do to kickstart the process and create trust, or at least create the opportunity to be trusted with a new group of people that I'm working with?
You know, that's a critical leadership principle once again. And that's because so many leaders will just show up and start telling people what to do, and here's what we're going to do, and here's what our plan is, and so forth. And that's a very, very harmful approach. So, you know, there are a couple things that are really important. One is to schedule one-on-one meetings with each member of your team. And be very intentional about understanding or beginning to learn from them, you know, their career aspirations, a little bit about their personal situations, about maybe their career goals, but just kind of breaking the ice and getting to know them is an important part of the process. Once you get through that, once you break the ice, then there has to be clarity, and this one's really, really important. Is how are we going to communicate as a boss in a direct report? Okay, here's the information that I need from you. Here's the format that I want it in. Here's how often I want it. Here are the things that I don't need to know. Here are things that I do need to know. Here are the expectations. Here are the goals and objectives. There has to be some real intentionality about setting or creating absolute clarity with that individual. And so that's the work that you need to do on an individual basis. As far as the team is concerned, you know, you've got to do some work there as well, because, you know, you have to evaluate how healthy is this team? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? So being able to evaluate the team performance will give you some clues as to, you know, how to lead them. But also you have to make it clear on who you are as a leader. You know, here are the things that are important to me. Here are the goals and objectives that we have responsibility for. Here's how accountability works in our organization. You know, those kinds of conversations are critically important to be able to set expectations up front. When you take over a new team, people are usually very nervous. You know, who is this individual? What are they going to do? Are they going to fire us all? You know, I mean, it's an uncomfortable time. And so the better job you do at creating clarity around you know, performance, goals and objectives, communications, if you'll take the time to do those things up front, things will go much more smoothly. And this is not a one and done kind of deal. I would say over the first 6 months minimum, you've got to be very intentional about creating clarity on this team so that everybody knows exactly what to expect. And I'll tell you, Jeff, there are very, very few leaders that do that. And that's why, yeah. You know, that's why early on, with a new leader, things are pretty chaotic and sometimes, maybe sometimes even dysfunctional. And so there's no need to do that if you're much more intentional about creating clarity with the team and with the individuals on the team.
And I just add one thing, you know, if you're a new leader and just recently promoted or potentially about to step into that role, everything Bob just said takes time. And so you have to invest the time one-on-one with your people and then as a group to establish that rapport and start connecting with them. And then he said it as well, but, you know, how can you share, hey, here's what I'm good at, here's what I'm not that good at, and here's where you all are good and can complement me as a leader and make us stronger as a team. And so just, again, that humility aspect is a key part up front in those first 90 days, 6 months.
Never confuse simple for easy, right guys?
Never.
It's not rocket science, folks, but it is not easy. And Bob, I love the word intentionality. I think that is such a key part of understanding what it takes to be a great leader is you got to be intentional. You have to make the time for this, Matt, to your point. You have to make time to build trust. And if you don't take that time, if you don't have that plan coming in, chaos will ensue and you're going to take a lot longer to get where you want to be. But if you can take a little bit of time up front, slow down to speed up just a bit, you can oftentimes really outperform in the long run by having put that investment in place. So I think this is a great way to wrap up this discussion is that trust is an investment. It takes time. It takes intentionality, but the results and the benefit of it outweigh the investment tenfold. So it's well worth the time you put in. That just about wraps it up for this week's episode of Calibrating Your Compass here on JJ Taylor's Brew University Podcasting. This has been all about trust. This has been about building the foundation of it all. And thank you to Bob and Matt both for being here and talking about it with me. Bob, thanks for being here.
Trust, what a big deal, Jeff. And what a pleasure it is to spend some time talking about it.
Absolutely. Matt, thank you as well for being a part of this conversation.
Yeah, Jeff, this is great. Good dialogue. Thanks for leading us through it. And thank you, everybody, for listening. This is one to go back 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, just to dust off a little bit while you're driving and remember, hey, how am I instilling trust and what can I build upon that I'm doing well right now and little tweaks I can make in the future.
Absolutely true. And we're only just getting started, folks. We've got more leadership competencies to come. So come on back, join us for the next one. We'll see you again here on Calibrating Your Compass. Until then, thanks for listening.